This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It is time for Law and Behold, which is now a monthly segment, which we do with the aim of improving constitutional literacy among Malaysians. And this, of course, is done in collaboration with the Malaysian Bar and the University of Malaya's Faculty of Law. So this month, I've got Firdaus Husni, the Chief Human Rights Strategist at the Malaysian Centre for Constitutionalism and Human Rights, or MCCHR, joining me to discuss some issues that dominated the news in April 2021 and a bit from end of March as well. So we're going to be looking at issues surrounding Undi 18, the Tamat Darurat Committee, and also a suit filed by the Malaysian Bar. Welcome, Firdaus. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Juliet?
Very well. Thank you so much for joining us today. But, you know, something that I didn't just mention, and that's, I think, the most recent news which has happened, you know, over the weekend, and that, of course, is the arrest of activists, right? So first, there was the arrest of artist Fahmi Ritza, who was, according to his lawyer, being investigated under the Sedition Act and Communications and Multimedia Act for sharing, quote-unquote, offensive and menacing content. And then later, we heard also about the arrest of five activists who were detained over a demo that they had to end the EMCO, and this is over in Tawau Village. Get us up to speed, Firdaus. What's been happening?
All right, okay. So, yeah, so these two arrests are two latest events of the government violating the constitutional rights of the citizens. So what we see happening right now is with Fahmi Ritza, number one, is, if you all have been following the news, he has actually created a Spotify playlist. And that playlist is called Dengki Ke, which was in response to a comment made by the Queen on her social media when commentators raised the question about vaccination for the royal family.
That's right.
Yep. And so due to the creation of that playlist, he was arrested, and the investigation that was conducted on him was on the basis of the Sedition Act. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So first and foremost, the Sedition Act has to go. It has no place in a functioning democracy. It is an archaic piece of law, and it goes against the very heart of the constitutional guarantee that we have in our federal constitution under Article 10 that says that every citizen has the right to freedom of speech and expression. Now, I know there are quite a number of debates surrounding political satire, which was, you know, the method that's been utilized by Fahmi Ritza in this case. Now, talking about satire, specifically political satire, yeah, I think what would be relevant to highlight here is there's an excerpt by a UN body talking about freedom of expression in relation to comments on a public figure. And I'll just share a gist of that here. It says that the mere fact that a form of expression, be it satire or any other form, are considered to be insulting to a public figure is not sufficient to justify the imposition of penalty. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And moreover, all public figures, including those exercising highest political authority, are legitimately subject to criticism and political opposition. So in a functioning democracy, yeah, there should be room for dissent, there should be room for criticism, and there should be a platform for a healthy engagement for such criticism to take place, and of course a platform to then respond to that criticism. And that is not what we are seeing with what's happening with Fahmi Ritza. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's one. And number two, the arrest, and this happened just yesterday, the arrest of a number of activists organized in an organization called Borneo Comrade. Mm-hmm. So from what I understand, the arrest took place as the activists were protesting against the extension of MCO of a community, a village in Tawau.
That's right, yeah.
And the concern was that there has not been enough being done by the authority to support this community who are less privileged in terms of socio-economic background. And so there is a concern on how are they going to survive an extension to the MCO, hence the protest.
Yeah, because so they are like daily wage earners, correct, mostly?
Yeah, yes, that's right, that's right. And so the right way to deal with that protest is to engage and deal with the criticism and the concern that was raised. But instead of doing that, we see the activists being arrested for raising that. And so again, this is a violation of our constitutional right on freedom of expression, and not only that, freedom of assembly. So what I'm hearing from the news is that Borneo Comrade activists are likely to face charges also under the Peaceful Assembly Act. So it's not just freedom of expression we're talking about here, but also freedom of assembly. And the specific section that was reported was Section 9.5. Section 9.5 essentially deals with a failure of an assembly organizer to notify the police. I have a bit of problem with that because what if it there's a need for a spontaneous assembly? That's and right. And so therefore an advance notification is not possible. And so while the authority may seek to regulate an assembly, but it cannot be to the extent that it defeats or makes impossible the exercise of such right, which in this case is the freedom to assemble peacefully.
Okay. All right. So I guess I'm going to keep an eye on this. And there seems to be, you know, quite a few arrests happening, quite a few police reports being made. So we're going to see what's going to happen there when we catch up next month, hopefully. But another big issue, of course, and this started towards the end of March. So Persatuan Pengundi Muda, better known as Undi 18, right? They announced they were taking legal action against the government. And this is because the EC or Election Commission announced the delay of registration of voters between 18 and 20 years old. You know, we both know that the folks behind Undi 18 said they should not be denied their constitutional right to vote. Can you just remind us a little bit about this case?
All right, sure. So the whole premise of Undi 18, the whole premise of the amendment is predicated on the fact that everyone is entitled the right to vote. And in 2019, well, the country witnessed a historic amendment to the federal constitution, specifically to Article 119. Mm. Yeah, and almost, you know, 2 years after that, we still don't see this being implemented. By that, I meant lowering the voting age from 21 to 18, and that forms the basis of this legal challenge by Undi 18. Yeah, and talking about voting, yeah. It's important to stress that voting, it's not a privilege. Voting here is a right. And in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, it says, I'll just, you know, read the relevant part. Mm-hmm. Specifically under Article 21.1, it says that everyone has the right to take part in the government of his country, either directly or through representative. That's 21.1. 21.3 says that the will of the people shall be the basis of the authority of government. And that's essentially an election. And talking about election has to be periodic and genuine election. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But what we are seeing right now with this announcement by the EC that it is not going to be implemented anytime soon and will in fact be delayed up to September 2022, to me, are we seeing a genuine effort by the Election Commission to ensure that the amendment to lower the voting age will actually be implemented? That to me is doubtful, and that forms part of the suit that we are seeing filed by Undi 18 under our federal constitution. Article 119 is where we see our right to vote being guaranteed.
Okay. And could you help explain what the whole concept of voter suppression is for those who are unfamiliar?
Okay, so voter suppression itself is a concept that's being used to illustrate any strategy or tactic to influence a certain outcome of an election. And how does this tactic being carried? It can be either by legal means or illegal means. Mm-hmm. And how it's being done is by employing certain tactic to suppress the ability or the capacity of certain group of people within the community to be able to vote. And we've heard this happening historically. We've heard this happen in the United States, in which voter suppression affect a large community of the African American. Mm-hmm. And so it's not exactly a new concept, but commentators have likened this delay announcement as akin to a voter suppression.
And do we know, you know, back to the Undi 18 suit, right? Do we know what the basis given by the Attorney General was for objecting to this application in the first place?
Okay, so from what has been covered in the media, the basis of the objection was that it's premature and also did not take into account the fact that it is not only the lowering of the voting age that was passed in 2019, but also automatic voter registration.
That's
and
right.
So carrying these two into practice actually requires more time. That was the basis of that of the Attorney General in objecting. Now the response to that would be first automatic voter registration and lowering making it possible for now 18-year-old to vote to me are two separate matters.
Sure.
It need not go together. I don't see the nexus of why both has to go hand in hand. And so on that basis alone, my personal view, that objection should not stand. Number two, EC, I'm not sure whether this was actually mentioned by the EGC also, but EC earlier when they announced the delay, they also said, oh, due to the pandemic, it has affected our preparation to put this in place, and so therefore we must be realistic. To me, this pandemic is not new. This pandemic, we are entering into year two of handling, of the world handling this pandemic. And so therefore, you would have thought that a more responsive action to deal with that part of the implementation that's being affected would have been something that is in place when the pandemic first happened. Mm-hmm. But you're not hearing this from the EC as well. And to me, that sounds like another excuse to have it delay and not put it in practice as soon as possible.
That's right. I mean, it's not like we stopped working during the pandemic. We just shifted.
Exactly.
We just shifted our work. So, that sort of begs a bit of explanation, I suppose.
At the moment, it's still ongoing, and so it would be interesting to see how the judges will look at this application in light of our right to vote.
Okay, all right. I'm speaking today to Firdaus Husni. She's the Chief Human Rights Strategist at the Malaysian Centre for Constitutionalism and Human Rights, or the MCCHR, and it's an episode of Law and Behold. And we're looking at some of the headlines that dominated the news over in April and also some from the end of March. And coming up after this quick break, we're going to find out more about the suit filed by the Malaysian Bar and what that's all about. That's coming up after this quick break. You're listening to Law and Behold on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Law and Behold on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs, and joining me on the line today is Firdaus Husni. She's the Chief Human Rights Strategist at the Malaysian Centre for Constitutionalism and Human Rights. And we're taking a look at some of this news from April and a bit of from the end of March that involves our Malaysian Constitution. So before the break, we were looking at the arrests of activists and, you know, how that ties in with freedom of speech and expression. And then we also talked about the suit that was filed by Undi 18. But now we're going to talk about another suit that was filed, and this is the suit by the Malaysian Bar. So I think it was the Malaysian Bar actually commenced legal action against the government, am I correct? And this was seeking to nullify several provisions of the emergency ordinance. Can you tell me a little bit about what this is all about?
Sure. All right. So this suit that's being filed by the Malaysian Bar this month, you're right, Juliet, it's not too, it's not against the entire emergency ordinance, but only certain parts of the emergency ordinance. And to highlight some of those parts, parts concerning the suspension of parliament, the suspension of the state legislative assembly, the provision on compensation for assets under the emergency ordinance, instead of the courts determining the amount of compensation, it's now left to the government. So that part is being challenged as well. Mm-hmm. Aside from that, the section on providing for furtherance of executive powers, that is also being challenged. And all of these sections are contained in the first emergency ordinance that was announced in January. And there are also other emergency ordinance that followed after that. And these two became part of the challenge by the Malaysian Bar, specifically the emergency ordinance regarding fake news.
Okay, and this gathered some response from the government as well, right? Tell me a little bit about what that response was and what you actually think of this this response.
Okay, I had a quick look at the statement that was released by Minister in the Prime Minister's Department, essentially stating that the emergency ordinance came into existence because it is to deal with the pandemic. Mm. But to me, that does not answer the question, how does it deal with the pandemic? That was not addressed anywhere in that statement at all. And several commentators also highlighted the fact that the concern on suspension of parliament and how it's affecting our democracy and how that sits, you know, within the larger constitutional scheme, that wasn't commented or mentioned anywhere at all in that statement. And to me, that speaks volume of the merits of emergency ordinance being used to actually address the pandemic. And it speaks volume on how it, I mean, it does bring detriment to our democracy. And there is no really excuse to justify that. If there is, you would have seen it in that statement. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, even like the Hakam president, Gurdial Singh Nija, who's a lawyer, of course, said that the law minister failed to recognize that the challenge to the emergency proclamation was actually grounded on the argument that there had been a clear violation of the federal constitution, because Article 150, you know, stipulates that the proclamation and the ordinances enacted under it must be tabled before parliament, right? A procedure that didn't happen because of the suspension of parliament and the state assemblies.
That's right. The suspension of parliament particularly was a very concerning move to be included in the emergency ordinance, because it was there in the federal constitution as a safeguard against potential abuse of power. If our crafters, the federal constitution, the committee drafting the federal constitution did not see it fit to include that, then, you know, it wouldn't have been there. And so to have an emergency ordinance that defeats that safeguard, to me, that cannot be the accepted position.
Yeah. And what do you think this suspension of parliament actually means, you know, to our democracy as a whole?
So in a functioning democracy, a country that has federal constitution as the highest law of the land, we look to principles that can guarantee, that can help ensure good governance. And those principles would include separation of power, which we see in the federal constitution, the fact that we have a separate institution making law, the parliament, the fact that we have a separate institution enforcing that law, which is our government, the executive, and the fact that we have a separate institution determining where there are disputes in the law, which is our judiciary. All these institutions are set up in the federal constitution. The federal constitution also sets out the power and the extent of that power to be exercised by these three institutions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, with the concept of separation of power comes the concept of checks and balances. Checks and balances means it's important that power checks another power. And that is a quote by a French philosopher, Montesquieu, which basically says that there is a role to be played by each of these three institutions to check against each other, because powers, personnel, function, all of that cannot be concentrated only in one institution, but has to be separated for the checking and balancing to be effective. Mm-hmm. So effective here is the key word. So if you now have and one out of the three institutions that's being suspended through the emergency ordinance, then that defeats the checking and balancing function. That defeats the purpose of why we have separation of power in our country. And that is why it's very damaging to our democracy to allow this to continue to exist in the emergency ordinance.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like, sort of a bit of a disdain for the rule of law, the constitution, our established legal processes almost.
Yeah, that's right. The rule of law, one of the facets that makes the rule of law is that where powers are accorded, it has to be for the purpose it was given. It has to be proportionate. And all that is now being put into question with this particular section of the emergency ordinance.
Yeah, and there are several civil actions pending before the court regarding this, right? So I guess we'll just have to keep an eye on what's going to happen there, because so many other people besides the Malaysian Bar, like I think opposition leader Anwar Ibrahim, even former UMNO leader Khairuddin Hassan, several NGOs, they've all filed civil actions to question the government's use of the emergency to fight COVID-19, right?
Yes, that's right. So it would be interesting to me, the very fact that we see a lot of legal suit against the emergency ordinance being filed, that in itself illustrate how concerning these provisions are. And also it would be interesting to see how the judge will deliberate on all of these challenges.
Okay, all right. So we'll keep an eye out on that. But now finally, one other topic that I want to talk to you about is the Tamat Darurat Committee, and that's appealing to the Yang di-Pertuan Agong to end the state of emergency before the 1st of August, right? Tell me a little bit about that. And, also constitutionally, can the Yang di-Pertuan Agong actually do that?
Well, okay, as we understand it, our monarch is a constitutional monarch, which means most of the king's powers and the limits of his powers are derived from the constitution. And if you look at Article 40, it says most of his powers are to be exercisable on advice, and this includes proclaiming emergency under Article 151. Now, if you look in Article 153, that's where you will see a mention of a revocation or annulment of a proclamation or ordinance on emergency. Now, it follows, therefore, reading all this, Article 40, 151, 153, what we can derive from there is that in order to end the emergency earlier than August the 1st, this also has to be done on the advice of the cabinet, just as the proclamation was. So if we are looking at what the Tamat Darurat Committee has been doing, they've launched an online petition, they've submitted memorandum to the king, and they've been granted an audience with the king. To me, the way I see it, all of these are moves for them to make a political statement, for them to bring the sentiment on the ground to the attention of the YDPA, and most likely to put pressure on the government to advise the YDPA to end the emergency earlier than August the 1st. So to go back to your question earlier, constitutionally, can the YDPA do that? Constitutionally, on his own accord, the YDPA cannot end the emergency earlier than August the 1st. It has to be done on the advice of the cabinet.
Okay, all right. So we also have to see, the YDPA has granted them an audience. So I guess we just got to keep updated and keep up to date on that and see what happens. We'll have a lot to discuss next month, I'm sure, all the outcomes of these different cases. Anything else you wanted to add?
No. No, I think that's about it regarding the recent happenings and developments on our constitution and constitutional rights.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Firdaus.
You're welcome.
I've been speaking to Firdaus Husni, the Chief Human Rights Strategist at the Malaysian Centre for Constitutionalism and Human Rights, or MCCHR, and we were going through some of the cases that involves our federal constitution over the last month or so. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Law and Behold interviews, you can search for the podcast at bfm.my or on the BFM app. This has been Law and Behold on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.